Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Bet by the last line. We left off with the statement of Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Halocha Treifa Yoledet Umeshabechet, that a treifa has the capacity to give birth, and not only does it give birth, but it actually flourishes afterwards. So that would take away any of the simanim that we would otherwise know to identify for us whether something is a treifa or is not a treifa, because a treifa lives on like any other behemah. Then we lose all the indicators that we'd spoken about previously. Amar Meimar. Now Meimar says, Hane bei de treifa, the eggs that are born to a bird that is a treifa, shichla kama, the first clutch, asira, is problematic. Mikan veilech, from here to forward, havilei, zev zegureim umutar. Then it is a joint contribution, and that joint contribution makes it that it is mutar. So now, a Meimar statement has two components to it. The first of which is that the first set of eggs, or the first clutch that is born after the bird becomes a treifa, have the same din, or they're considered just like the bird itself. And that is based on the ubar yerechimohu, that a fetus or any birth that comes from an animal is considered to be an extension of the animal itself. So when she became a treifa, she not only herself became a treifa, but her component parts, which include these eggs that were there at the time, the first clutch that comes out. Afterwards, the eggs are a joint contribution. There's both the male and the female that are contributing to the eggs going forward, and that is that the male fertilizes the eggs of the female. The male is not a treifa, the female is a treifa. And then you have zev zeh goreim, and I'm assuming here that zev zeh goreim is mutar. When you have joint contribution, that it is mutar. So just in terms of the creation of the eggs within the female bird has eggs or ovaries of sorts that create the eggs that start out with the yolk of the egg, the chelbon of the egg, and then it slowly moves through the birthing system, which is that it moves the egg along this piping system until it's finally laid the egg, which along towards the tail end of that is where the shell or the white part is added on the outside. And as it moves through the system, it develops more and more, meaning that including the white around it, and then the eggshell that eventually comes out when the chicken lays the egg or the bird lays the egg. In the earlier stages, there's a point at which the egg can be fertilized by the male. Now, today we have eggs that come about that are not fertilized at all. The bird will lay eggs even if they're not fertilized. If it is an unfertilized egg, then the egg will never develop into a chick. It will do nothing besides be the eggs that we have today. On the other hand, if it is fertilized by a male in the interim, then once the egg is born, everything that the chick needs is inside the egg, and it's incubated outside of the female, and then it develops into a chick over time. So we're speaking over here about eggs that are being fertilized, eggs that are going to develop into chicks. In their day, that was the general state of eggs, but they were fertilized. They didn't separate the males and the females. Today, they keep the male chickens, the roosters, away from the chickens, and therefore you only get unfertilized eggs, which are used for commercial production, and those are the ones that we are served. So here we're speaking about eggs that are fertilized. The original egg that was fertilized, or eggs that are within her system right now, when she becomes a treifa, are impacted by her status. Whenever the bird turns over to being a treifa, anything inside of it is also turned over to be a treifa, and then until she's basically rid herself of all those eggs, any egg that's associated with this bird is classified as a treifa. And that's why the first clutch is asira. Now, the zev zeh goreim is not relevant over here. Tosafot comments on the fact that zev zeh goreim is only an issue when you have one thing that's asur and one thing that is mutar, and they're coming together. If both items, when they come together, are mutar, then it's not a zev zeh goreim, because they were both mutarim. There was nothing to contrast. There was no goreim and goreim. It was all mutar. The first set of eggs, when they were fertilized by the male, both the male and the female were mutar at that time. There's no zev zeh goreim. Now you have an egg inside of the female. When the female turns into a treifa, she impacts on the egg itself and it becomes a treifa. Or all the eggs in her system at that time are going to be treifot. Once she's cleared those eggs out of the system, the next set of eggs or the next clutch that is born are from fertilized eggs that come from a male that is mutar and a female that is a treifa. And that's why the subsequent eggs are okay, because zev zeh goreim is mutar. Eitvei Rav Ashi the Meimar. Now Rav Ashi challenges a Meimar statement. B'shoven b'beitza treifa, שאסורה מפני שגדלה באיסור. They both agree that when it comes to a beitza, an egg that's born to a treifa, that it's problematic because it grew beisur, meaning that the egg developed inside of the chicken that was a treifa. Now, the question of v'shavin, which is, seems to be that there's a machloket, and then there are two parties that agree. Rashi over here says, this is the machloket, Reb Eliezer and the Rabbanon, Reb Eliezer, Reb Yeshua, which we're about to read. We're about to bring a braita that has a machloket about a vlad of a treifa, machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and based on that machloket, the last line of that is v'shavin. Even though they differ with regards to their views about a fetus of a treifa or an offspring of a treifa, nevertheless with eggs, they both come to agreement that it's problematic. That's one way to read it. The majority of Rishonim, the Balei Tosfot themselves, already say this. Lo kepeirish akuntris, not like Rashi, the kaya plukta, the Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, ella, kaya plukta, the Beit Shammai, u Beit Hillel. It's a machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which is from the Mishnah in Idiot, from which this quote is taken directly. It's an exact quote from that Mishnah in Idiot. That's not Hotam. The Mishnah in Idiot says, Beitzat nivela, shikimota nimker b'shuk. If you have an egg that is born to a nivela, meaning that they cut open the chicken and you have a finished egg inside of the chicken. So the chicken's a nevela. What's the status of the egg that came from this chicken? How influenced is the egg by the status of the chicken? So Beit Shammai Matirim. Beit Shammai says you can sell that egg. It's a kosher egg. There's no problem with the egg at all. Beit Hillel Usrim. Beit Hillel says that it's a problem because it came out of a nevela. And therefore the egg has the same status as the chicken itself. It is a nevela. Umodim. And this is the line that they're quoting from that. But Beitzat Treifa, Shasura Mipnei Shigidula Beisur. By a Treifa, there's a difference because it grew up Beisur. As opposed to a Nevela, the egg does not develop inside of a chicken that is a Nevela. That means that whenever the chicken became a Nevela, meaning dead, whatever the status of the egg is at that point, whatever it is what it is. The Nevela trigger or threshold happened at a certain point. The egg needs to be finished by that point. If the egg is not finished, then it's still part of the chicken itself. It is part of the nevela. That we'll get to later in the Masechta about Mura B'Gidin, how far along an egg needs to be to separate away from the chicken and be considered a separate entity versus a part and parcel of the chicken. At a certain stage in development, the egg separates away from the chicken. At that point, it becomes an independent entity. The point is that this is an egg that's sold in the shuk. That means that it's basically a finished egg. It's reached the end of the line. It just didn't get out of the chicken. Now you have a chicken that's a nevela. How influential is that chicken on the egg? Beit Hillel says it makes it into a nevela. It's a problem. Beit Shammai says it's okay to sell in the shuk. Then we have a modim. They both agree by a treifa it's different. Because by a treifa, the egg can develop inside of the treifa. That means that not only did it happen at a trigger point where the egg was done and then it became a nevela, it means that the egg developed while it was inside of a treifa. And therefore both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in that instance agree that this is considered or classified as a treifa, this egg, because it grew up, it developed inside of the treifa. It wasn't just that it became a nevela and the egg happened to be inside. It's that the whole egg developed while it was a treifa. Now, the challenge over here is to a Amemar, who's saying here that the first set of eggs is problematic. After that, all the eggs are fine. Now we have a statement that says, Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, or Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, everybody agrees that if you have an egg that comes from a treifa, that it's asura. So how is a Mamer going to deal with that? A Mamer just said you can have eggs that are mutarot. How come he's saying that the eggs are asurot? The Gemara answers here based on something that we have discussed in the Gemara in Beitza, which is hatam, b'desafna mi'aro. It's a case where it got, quote unquote, fertilized from the ground. I think the scientific terminology is parthenogenesis, which is the fact that the egg is developed without a male. Developed from a female itself without any contribution of the male. Their view was that it happened because the safna baharo, its interaction with the ground, whatever it was that caused this to happen. What we're discussing is basically an unfertilized egg. So with the Saplanara, everybody's going to agree that that base is problematic because then there's only one contributor to the egg, and that's the female, and the female's a treifa. And even a Mamar would agree in that case, there's no Zev Zeg Gorim, and therefore it is Asur. So that's how he answers that question as to why their opinions are that all eggs are Asur by a treifa. That's because those are unfertilized eggs. So unfertilized eggs are not going to be chicks. They're only going to be eggs, and yet they're still asurim because they developed inside of a treifa. Why does he just answer that they were speaking about the first clutch? Because he agrees that the first clutch is asura. So why not just say that that's the case? Imkein gadla. Because then, why does it say over there that the egg grew up b'isur? Gamra b'boyle. It should be that it finished b'isur. Meaning that over here, the egg grew up, developed b'isur. That's not exactly what happened. What happened here is that the chicken became a treifa in the middle of the process of the development of the egg. So the egg was finished when it was a treifa. It didn't begin when it was a treifa. It was somewhere along the line on the process of the egg developing when it became a treifa. So the proper terminology that should have been used if it really was speaking about the first clutch is gamra, that it was completed when it was a treifa. Now that the terminology that's used in Vishavim, Bebetza Treifa, Shasura, Bipneshe, Gadla, Bisur, means that it developed the whole time as a treifa. So that makes it sound like the bird was a treifa prior to the egg developing, and that can only be in the second clutch and onward. And therefore, his only option to answer was that it's bidisafna miara, where it was an unfertilized egg. It's an egg that only has one contributor to it. Elaha ditnan, that Mishnah that we have really, ditanya breita, vlad treifa, an offspring of a treifa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, lo yikrav begabe mizbeach. You cannot put it on the mizbeach. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, yikrav. That you can put it on the mizbeach. So machloket here, whether a treifa that gives birth to a offspring, is that offspring allowed to be put on the mizbeach? It's obvious that the parent can't go on the mizbeach. Question is, the offspring, can it go on the mizbeach? But my kamiflegay, according to you, what are they arguing about? Benitrefa ubelasof ibra. It has to be a case for you where it was a treifa originally, and then it became pregnant afterwards. Because if it was already pregnant, and then it became a treifa, you already told us that ubar yerachimo. That means that the fetus automatically would take on the standing of the mother, and everybody would agree that it is a treifa. So it must be that she was a treifa beforehand. Then she had a baby. Not only that can happen, that is they have dual contribution. You have the male and the female contributing to it. And now you have a case of zev zeh goreim. And therefore, Rabbi Lezer savar zev zeh goreim asur. Rabbi Lezer believes that even when you have one contributor that is okay and one contributor is problematic, that's still asur. And that's why you can't put it on the mizbeach. Rabbi Yeshua savar zev zeh goreim mutar. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees and says zev zeh goreim is okay, and that's why you can put it on the mizbeach. That's why a vlad of a treifa is fine. Yochi. If that's the case, ad mitlagei legavoa liflagul lehedjot. Why are they arguing about an issue of whether it's a good korban or not a good korban? Why don't they argue whether you can eat it or you can't eat it? The same problem that you have for Kodesh, you have for a person eating this. Is the offspring designated as a treifa or is it not designated as a treifa? They will have two implications. One implication is it can't go on the mizbeach. The second implication is that you can't eat it. So why, speaking about not going on the mizbeach, speak about the fact that you can't eat such an animal? There's a much more fundamental issue here of it being a treifa. It says, Lodiacha kocho de Rabbi Yeshua. The reason they formulated it in this manner is to teach you how far Rabbi Yeshua's position goes, that filo gvoa nami shari, that he doesn't think it's ma'us, and he says you can even put it on the mizbeach. So, v'lif l'gul behedrot, why don't argue about whether it's edible or whether you can eat it? Lodiacha kocho de Rabbi Eliezer. Because then you would know how far Rabbi Eliezer's opinions go, da filo de hedjot nami asur. That he says, even for Hejot, it's Asur. You could have thought that his position was only by Kodesh, because it's Maus. But by Hejot, it's Mutar. He'll agree that Zev Zeh Goreim is okay. My answer is, Koach de Hetera Odiflei. The Taneiach work would rather emphasize the Tzad of Heter. Koach de Hetera Odiflei. This is mentioned numerous times in Shas. In the Gemara and Beitza, Rashi has this famous formulation, which is that it's easy to be a Machmir. Doesn't take any erudition to be a Machmir. It takes tremendous Chochma, understanding, and svara, and big shoulders to be a matir. Means that you need to know what you're saying when you're a matir. When you're a machmir, it's always, okay, I could be a machmir, because then nothing goes wrong. I'm just being machmir, and I'm avoiding the problem altogether. To be a matir, you have to take an active stand, and therefore be matir the item. And therefore we focus on the one who is matir, rather than the one that is oser. Umodim bebeitzat treifa sheasura. Now, according to Rashi, this is literally where this belongs, because he says, Vishavin before was on this machloket of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, for the Baalei Tosafot and the rest of the Rishonim who think that this is speaking about that Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in the Mishnah and Ediot, then this is a quote from that, and how do we reconcile that with Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, which is, Modim Bebeitza Trefasha Surah, Bidisafta Meara. Over there, it is the unfertilized egg, Debechad Gorimu. Because as we said before, there's only one Gorim there, there's only the female, there's only the Trefa. That's the problem, there's no male contributor in that case. And that's why the egg would be Asura. This is the setup of the situation, according to what we have from Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, plus a Meimar. So the fact that, first of all, a trefa can give birth. The fact that a trefa can give birth means that this female then can have fertilized eggs even after she becomes a trefa. The result of that is that the first clutch is problematic because the eggs were there when she converted or became a trefa. On the other hand, the subsequent eggs are okay because you have dual contribution. You have the male and the female. You have an iser and heter. Zev zeh gorem is mutar. And that gives you the outcome of what we just discussed along these lines based on the two statements, one of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov and the other one of a Meimar. All right, now, there's an incredible Tosafot over here. It says, if someone checks a bird and finds finished eggs inside of it, mutarot lochlan bechalav, you'll have to eat them together with milk. The only time we say it's problematic is when they have veins or blood vessels surrounding the egg. I mean, that's the transition point, which is somewhere between the point where the egg is formed in the beginning, where it's covered in blood vessels, where then it's still connected to the mother and considered to be fleshik along with the mother. There's a certain point where the egg separates away from the mother and then becomes quote-unquote paruv and is no longer basar. Aval, b'she'im u'rot, mutar. But if it wasn't covered in gidin, then it is mutar. How do we reconcile that with what we're saying over here? Eibar yerechimo. Why is it an extension of the mother? Over here, you're telling me that the egg is no longer fleshik once it's not mu'rot b'gidin. So why can you make an egg into a trefa if it's already separated away from the gidim of the mother? Why is there seemingly an inconsistency in the way that we're treating the eggs? So the answers are more incredible than the question, which is v'teretz abal halachot gidolot, the gabei iser nevela doraita. So when it comes to iser nevela min haTorah, echmiru. There they were machmir, meaning that in the case of Beit Hillel, who says when you find a finished egg inside of the bird, it's considered to be a nevela. But why is a finished egg a nevela if the egg is considered to be separate from the mother and it doesn't have a din of being fleshik anymore? It's a par of egg. It's a totally separate entity. So the Baal HaGlachot Gedolot says that when it comes to Iser Nevela Doraita Hechmiru, Iser Nevela is a din Doraita, and therefore they said it has the status of the bird. Aval Basar Of Bichalav Dirabonon Hekilu. But because chicken and milk are only midrabanan, over there they were mekio. Or in other words, he's saying the egg is fleshik, but it's fleshik oaf. And since fleshik oaf is only midrabanan, we allow the egg to be eaten with milk, even though technically it is fleshik. So I mean, after the egg is born, then it's fine, it's parav. But the egg, which is a completed egg and a finished egg that's found inside of the bird, really, it's fleshik. It really belongs to the mother, it's connected to the mother, and has the status of the mother. So if the mother becomes a nevela, the egg becomes a nevela, remains inside the mother when the mother is shechted, then it's basar, like the mother. So how do you eat it with milk? It's because it's only derabonon. Incredible statement that it's really a fleshig egg, but we allow it because it's a din derabonon of milk and meat with regards to a chicken. Rabbeinu tam teretz, the beitzat nevela hechmiru, mishum nevela havi dovar asur. So they were machmir by nevela because nevela is inherently asur. Of a basarof bichalav that we had there. When it comes to fleshiks, chicken fleshiks, and milk, then there's nothing inherently asur over here. The egg by itself is mutar, and the milk by itself is mutar. They're only asur when you bring them together. So over there, they were mekil. Nevela, where there's an inherent isur, there they were machmir. So first of all, it's incredible, because both of them agree in this context that the egg that's found inside the bird, when it's fully developed, the egg is really fleshik. Despite the fact that the egg is fleshik, we're allowing you to eat it with milchiks. Either according to Baal HaGalachot Gedolot, because it's Drabonon, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, which is the shita that he uses. We saw this in Avodah Zarah, as well as in other places, that Basar B'Chalav is an exception because both items are inherently mutar. It's only when they're brought together, Derech Bishul, that they become a problem. That's the way that the Baalei Tosafot deal with this issue. And then he says, Va'od yesh lomar, some suggest, the hainu time of the asrei Beit Hillel. This is the reason Beit Hillel says it's problematic. Beitzat nevela, zera atu beitzat treifa. That the Beitzat nevela, the reason he makes an asur is because of Beitzat treifa, which is problematic. Beitzat treifa, surah, mishum de gamra b'isur. Now, the Beitzat treifa is more problematic because it's not a fixed point in time. The bird becomes a nevela at one point in time. Whatever the egg was at that time is what it is. So it didn't grow anymore. It didn't do anything after the bird was dead. On the other hand, when it's a treifa, the egg was finished while the bird was a treifa. So the treifa contributed to the completion of the egg, and that's what makes the egg problematic. So he says that maybe Beitzat Nevela, according to Beit Hillel, is just a gzeira otu Beitzat Treifa. That would obviously take away the sting of everything we said until now, which is that the eggs are really not fleshik. It's just a gzeira otu, which would be the most appealing way to explain it. He says, "Mi uenu nirat teirze." Says, "I don't love that answer." Dalo gazrinan be'er the shechla badra to be'er the shechla kama. Over here, we don't say that the later clutches we should be gozer atu the first clutches. Says we don't see any of these gzera or atu be'er the safta miara or because of the self-fertilized eggs, we'll worry about fertilized eggs because all of those would be asurim v'treifa, and we don't gozer on all these other eggs. He says it seems far-fetched that they only by nevela where they gozer. Not in other places where it's much more problematic. The same treifa bird, when it lays an egg that's fertilized, it's okay. But if it lays it when an unfertilized egg, it's problematic. So you're not going to be gozer. The same chicken that gives one egg is okay, the other egg is no good. And then you can tell me a nevela, your gozer atu treifa, says that I would see that there should be many more because they wrote that that was the case. So Tosfot really leaves this as a situation where you can have a fleshik egg, quote unquote, and you can eat it with milk because either it's the Rabbanon according to the Baal, according to Rabbeinu Tam, because they're both of Heter, and therefore we allow you to eat it, even though technically, or according to Beit Hillel, it really is a fleshik egg when you have a completed egg inside of a bird that was shechted. Yeah, once it's laid, it's outside the bird. It's no longer part of the bird. Yeah. So then you can't say Uber Yerachimo anymore. Okay, Rav Acha Savala, okay, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Rav Acha held of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Umatila da Meimar Kidamran. And therefore he has a Meimar statement the way that we have it formulated here. So we have Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's statement from before, which is, treifa yoledet umishabechet. And then, through that, he then has the statement of a Meimar, which is that the first clutch is problematic, the subsequent clutches are okay. Ravina, lo savar lak Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Ravina doesn't hold of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. He thinks that a treifa can't give birth. Well, if a treifa can't give birth, then having subsequent clutches is not a realistic outcome over here. There's no halacha about that because it doesn't exist. And therefore, matni le meimar b'hai lishna. Therefore, his version of a meimar is different. Amar a meimar. This is what a meimar said. Hani bei the suffix treifa. If you have eggs of a bird that is a suffix treifa, the shichla kama mishayin in the hoop. It is from the first clutch we wait. Id hadra betano. If it then becomes pregnant again, meaning that it carries eggs again, sharya, then the first ones are okay. Ilo asiran. If not, then they are problematic. So this is based on the concept that treifa ain't a yoledet. If a treifa can give birth, then the whole story that we spoke about here is relevant. If a treifa ain't a yoledet, cannot give birth, then you can't have offspring when you are a treifa. So now I have a bird that is a suffix treifa. I don't know whether it is or isn't a treifa. So what's the test to know whether it is a treifa or not? Does it give birth? If it gives birth, it's proof positive that it's not a treifa. Now, the truth is, and Tosafot said this yesterday, just because it doesn't give birth is not proof negative that it is a treifa, because even animals that are not treifa sometimes don't give birth. That's not a guarantee, but it is a guarantee, proof positive, if it does give birth, that it's not a treifa. So then the amended statement of a meimar reads the following. The first clutch that is born to a suffix treifa, we don't know what the status was, because those eggs were in the chicken before it became a treifa. So there's no indication whether it's giving birth, not giving birth. This all had transpired before it was a treifa. Then, after the first clutch is gone, the second clutch of eggs that are laid by this chicken, if it lays them, that means that it is proof positive that it wasn't a treifa. And then retroactively, that indicates that the first set of eggs were also not a treifa because the bird wasn't a treifa all along. If the bird never lays eggs again, then we don't have any indication, it remains a suffix treifa, and then the first eggs are a surim because they are a suffix treifa. Now, it seems to be that this is only an issue when it's a suffix treifa, not in a case where it is a vadai treifa. When it's a badei treifa, then none of these tests matter because we know for sure it is a treifa. It's only when it's a safek do we use one of these tests to determine whether it is or isn't a treifa. So eidvei Rav Ashi le meimar. Now we bring the same questions that we had before. Modim bebeitzah treifa shasura mipnei shegadla biyisur. It sounds like here any egg that's born afterwards is problematic to a treifa. Amalei hotam b'deshich lakamo. That's the first set of eggs. Imkain gadla gamrabi abayle. Then why does it say it grew up as a egg in a treifa? It didn't develop there. Gamra, it only finished off when the animal became a treifa. Tnei gamra. So in this case, we changed, emend the statement to say that it was finished off. So the reason that these are asurot, or everybody agrees they're asurot, is because the first clutch. The first clutch is asura. Elahad, it's not vlad treifa, or tatanya, vlad treifa. Rabbi Eliezer, omer lo yikrab, legabi mizbeach. Rabbi Shul, omer yikrab. But Micah Miflegate. What's their argument about? Ish kishi ibra ulusof nitrefa. It has to be a case where she was already pregnant and then became a treifa, because the other case is implausible. If she was a treifa and then became pregnant, she isn't a treifa. So that by definition, she had to be pregnant before the treifa happened. Then what's their machloket about? It's not about zevzeg goreim, because that was prior to becoming a treifa. Rabbi Eliezer savar ubar yerechimohu. So this is exactly the machloket. Rabbi Eliezer believes that an ubar is an extension of the mother. And therefore, just like the mother became a treifa, so too did the fetus or the offspring become a treifa. And given that, the offspring now is asur to go on the mizbech. Rabbi Yeshua savar, ubar, lav yerechimo. The ubar is not an extension of the mother. So then it's mutar to put it on the mizbeach. Iochi, ademiflege le gvoa liflegu behedjot. Why are you arguing about an issue of kodashim? Why aren't you arguing about something where it's asur mutar to eat? Odiacha kochod Rabbi Yeshua, to tell you how far Rabbi Yeshua's position goes, to tell you that even to kodesh, he thinks it's okay. Beliflegu behedjot. Why don't they argue about a hedjot, meaning whether it's mutar or asur to eat it? Odiacha kochod Rabbi Eliezer, to indicate to you Rabbi Eliezer's position. My answer is again, koach de tera odifle. They want to emphasize the koach de'atera, which is Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Omodim vade beitza treifa shasura. If you know for certain that the bird is a treifa, then the beitza that comes out is a surah. V'deshich lakamo. There it's the first clutch, because that's the last clutch this bird's going to have, given that it's a treifa. Maitaima gufahi. Because it's part and parcel of the bird itself, and therefore the egg is converted or changed into the status of whatever happened to the bird happens to the egg as well, and therefore the egg is considered to be a treifa, and therefore the explanation over here is going to be all about the first clutch, because that's the last clutch this bird will have if it really is a treifa. If it has other clutches afterwards, it's not a treifa. Hell, as long as it's a safek treifa, then retroactively that will be matir all the eggs. If it is a treifa, we're never going to see another clutch out of this bird, and then the first eggs are obviously a surah, because they were converted. When it turned into a treifa, they converted the eggs into a treifa at that point in time. Even though the fetus is considered to be separate, nevertheless, when it comes to eggs, they are not considered to be separate. So even according to Rabbi Yeshua, who says that a fetus, ubar lav yerechimo, by an egg, that's considered to be part and parcel of the bird itself, rather than a separate entity from the bird. And that's why everybody agrees, by a beitza treifa, that it is a surah, because it was a part and parcel of the bird itself, and when the bird became a treifa, the egg became a treifa as well. It's the hilchata. Halacha is v'zachar, kol 12 chodesh, for a male, if you have a suffix treifa, if it lives beyond 12 months, then it tells you that it's not a treifa. That's a proof that it's not a treifa. Now Rashi says over here, that is for something that is a suffix treifa, which is either a case of drusa, where it was attacked by another animal, and therefore it needs a check in order to ensure that there is no problem with this animal. So a drusa that needs a check, if it crosses over 12 months, you no longer need to do that check. Or you have a suffix treifa. For whatever other reason, there's a suffix of a treifa over here. That 12-month period will then tell you that it's cleared the issue of treifa. B'nekeva, kosheina yoledet. By nekeva, if it doesn't give birth, now, again here, by Gevat, if it doesn't give birth, that's not proof. If it gives birth, it's proof that it's not a treifa. If it doesn't give birth, then it has the option for 12 months. It'll have the same thing. If it goes past 12 months, even if it didn't give birth, it's still cleared from being a treifa because it has both options. Female, whether it gives birth or it crosses over the 12-month period, both of those are indications that it's not a treifa. So now, the Baal Tosafot over here say, L'maida maskinan hashta hilchata to treifa enu yoledet. The fact that now we come to the conclusion that treifa does not give birth, lo mitukma plugtayad Rebbe Lezer Rebbe Yeshua, Then that makes it that we have to give the second explanation in a Meimar. And that means that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing about Uber Yerachimo. But Rabbi Yeshua sover lav Yerachimohu. Position of Rabbi Yeshua's premise on a fetus or an offspring is not considered to be the extension of the parent. That if it's included in the body of the bird, that it becomes like the bird itself. So Beitza, the egg, is the exception. The rule is Ubar Lav Erechimo. That does present a bit of a challenge, because whenever we have a Makoged Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, Halacha to Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Eliezer is a Shmutihu, either because he was from Beit Shammai, or because he was excommunicated. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus in the Tanur Shoach Naim, Baba Metzia, is excommunicated. So Halacha is going to be like Rabbi Yeshua. Now, that does present a bit of a challenge, because in other places in Shas, it's pretty clear that we paskin Ubar Yerechimo. Vitaima. And he brings examples from Baba Kama, where we have a animal that gores or does damage, that the animal and its offspring are responsible for that because of Ubar Yerachimo. And there are numerous examples throughout Shas where Ubar is considered to be Yerachimo. Yet the Gemara here is paskening based on the conclusion. And again, if it's Rabbi Yeshua versus Rabbi Eliezer, we're going to paskin Rabbi Yeshua that Ubar lav Yerachimo. It says, Uliyan Vlad, Hainu Taima. The Afagav the Alma Ubar Yerachimo. The Talmud Sefer basically says that the truth is, everywhere else in Shas, Ubar is Yerachimohu. Ulian Treifot Shiny. Treifa is different. The Taloi Bichyuta Behema. Because Treifa is about the life force of the animal. A Treifa means it no longer has enough life force to live. There's something draining the life force out of the animal. Ulu Abar Yeshlo Chiyut Bifnei Atzmo. But over here, the fetus has an existence outside of the parent, outside of the mother. Meaning that, in the end, if the fetus is born, and it lives, it shows you or demonstrates to you that it has life independent of the mother. So therefore, you can separate between Ubar Yerachimo in general, versus in this particular case of Ubar Lav Yerachimo by Treifot, because Treifot are a particular issue, and that is this thing alive? Is it going to live? Will it flourish? Will it live? When it comes to the mother, the answer is no. When it comes to the child, the answer is yes. So that means the child is demonstrating that it isn't a treifa. And in that way, it separates itself away from the mother. That's an important distinction that the Balei Tosafot bring over here in order to reconcile Rabbi Yeshua's position here of Ubar Lav Yerechimo versus many places in Shas where we conclude that Ubar is Yerechimo. And there it makes it basically into a case-by-case situation. He explains by treifa it's not that way. Whereas in other cases by Nezikin, in other cases it will be that way. But that means you have to look at every case and determine, is the Ubar being the extension of the mother, what did the Ubar contribute? Or is the Ubar in the same category as the mother? Or is there some way to separate the Ubar away from whatever is causing the problem for the mother? Alright, so now the Gemara takes a digression and says, Amaravuna, Kobiria Sheinbo Etzem, any creation, any live animal that's an invertebrate, Eino Mitkayem Yubet Kodesh, it doesn't live more than 12 months. So by definition, in order to live beyond 12 months, you need to be a vertebrate. And that's why over here, the question about treifa impacts the 12 months. 12 months is a period of time that defines the difference between an invertebrate and a vertebrate. And therefore, if you want to know if it's a treifa or not, then it has to live that amount of time to demonstrate that it is healthy and that it is not a treifa. Amar Papa, Shmami Nami Drabuna. So this is an unbelievable outcome or conclusion that is derived or drawn from the statement of Huna. Hadamar Shmuel, Kishol Sheitlia, Ve'ibe. If you have whether it's like a cucumber, a zucchini, something in that family that was now rotted, it has worms in it, Ve'ibe. In the place of its growth, Asura, then it's problematic. But Hane Tamre, Dekado, Lepata Treza Yarcheshata, Sharyan. And these dates that are inside of the barrel, after 12 months, they're going to be fine. So Rashi explains over here what the logic is. If you look at the last Rashi on Nunchet Amud Aleph, Kevan demeleche betocha kishut. Since the worms that are the rot inside of this zucchini or cucumber, but kishut mechuber bekarka, and the zucchini, whatever it is attached to the ground. Therefore, it's called sheretz ala aretz karinen bay. It's considered to be a sheretz. Hashoreitz al haaretz, and sheretz al haaretz is asuru. Aval itliya betalush. If it only rotted, and the worms developed inside of it after it was picked, lav shoreitzu. It's not considered to be sheretz al haaretz. Adenafik minei. until it exits the vegetable itself. Umalech al gabei karka, and then walks on the karka. So Rashi makes a distinction here. This sugya is really on Samach Zayin later on in the Masechta. We're going to get there and discuss it much more heavily. Just giving you a little piece of it, and Rashi is giving you an eye into this, which is that the restriction of Shvatzim is only when they're shoreitz al aretz, when they crawl on the ground. So crawling on the ground can happen in different ways. You could be inside a vegetable and crawling on the ground if you're attached to the ground. If the vegetable is a mechuber lekarka, then crawling inside the vegetable, outside the vegetable is irrelevant because you're crawling on the ground, you're attached to the ground. There are those that take issue with Rashi and Tosafot's explanation here to suggest that it doesn't need to be that the worm has to move in order for it to be a shreitz al aretz. If it's just attached to the ground inside the date without moving, it's already called a shreitz al aretz. That's the view of the Ramban. But either way, once the vegetable is separated away, then it's no longer true that you're shoreitz al aretz until the sheretz exits the vegetable. When it's outside the vegetable, then it's shoreitz al aretz. While it's still inside of the vegetable, that's considered to be shoreitz in the vegetable, not shoreitz al aretz. Now, the truth is that this is likely premised on an idea of spontaneous generation, which is that the worms or the infestation that is found inside of the vegetable did not originate from the outside, but rather was internally generated in the fruit. And so therefore the shratzim that are inside are part and parcel of the fruit of the vegetable until they exit from that fruit or vegetable. Today we know that many of those worms that develop, like for instance in fruits, are because the eggs were laid on the blossom early on, and then the eggs develop inside of the fruit, and then the later on, the eggs then hatch inside of the fruit, and that's why you have these items inside the fruit. It's not from spontaneous generation, it's because they were laid there, and then they are exiting. Again, when we get to Samach Zayin, we're going to spend a lot more time on this. So now, given that, see, we have two separate dinim. One din is when the kishur is attached, it's problematic. When it's detached, it's okay. So now here's the derivative din. Hanei kamrei dekado. You have these dates that are inside of a barrel. That's the girsa that we have. If you look up in the Balei Tosafot, the Rashbam had a girsa of that they were dachrim or dachris, which means that they rotted. These are dates that rotted because they're not necessarily kept in a barrel. The Rabbeinu Tam pushes back and says that many times we find dates in barrels. But everybody agrees that we have worms inside of these dates. So now, the worms that are inside of the dates could have developed inside of these dates when it was attached to the tree. So when it was attached to the tree, if there were worms that developed inside of the date, those are shoreitz al aretz and they're problematic. Now we have Rav Huna's din. Rav Huna's din says they have a lifespan of no more than 12 months. So that means if you wait 12 months, whatever worms were inside of the dates, they're gone. So those worms that crawled that were shoreitz al aretz when it's attached to the tree, they're gone. The worms made more worms. So there are more worms inside of those dates. Those worms only started out after it was detached from the tree. So those worms never were shoreitz al aretz. They're inside of this fruit, and they are guaranteed that they didn't happen or didn't grow when they were on the tree because it's now more than 12 months later. So that means they are not shoreitz al aretz, and you can eat them. They're not problematic. They're not a surim because they're not a sheretz ha-shoreitz al aretz. So that's how Rashi explains it over here. But either way, there's a possibility now of eating dates with worms in them, because we know for sure that those worms develop post the picking of the date. Now, if that's the case, they're okay as long as, according to Rashi, you haven't exited the fruit. And you can eat these without checking them. You don't need anything. You can eat them. What about the worms that developed on the tree and then now they're dead inside? And sheretz is problematic whether it's dead or alive. So you can be eating those dead worms. The idea being that it doesn't last 12 months, which is eno mitkayim. Eno mitkayim, that means, doesn't mean just it doesn't live. It doesn't exist. I mean, it decomposes. It's not going to be there after 12 months. So that's the idea here that you can eat this. Again, we're going to spend a lot more time on Samach Zayin, but this is an incredible thing, and the Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, that you can have like cheeses and other things where you have these worms crawling inside of them, and you can eat them without any problem. Yeah, they're just giving an example of dates, because dates store. I mean, the problem with the cucumber is it's not going to last. So you need something that's going to last 12 months. There are very few fruits in their day that lasted 12 months unless you dried them out. Dates happen to be one of those things that had lasted. So that's an amazing outcome. Again, it's just a little appetizer to what we're going to see later in the Masechta with regards to this. Amar Rav, late baka bar yoma. There is no, baka is some sort of itush. I'll call it a gnat. No gnat lives for more than a day. But late didva, and there's no fly bachato that lives more than a year. So they have a limited lifespan, and that has no, a lifespan no more than a day. and a fly has no more than a year. Amalei Rav Papa Labaye, v'hamrei inche, don't people have this following saying? Shav shane, for 7 years, imra bakta nibaka. The female gnat, the she gnat, quarreled with her husband. The female gnat quarreled with the male gnat. V'amrei, she said to him, kazita labar mechuza, you saw one of those people from the city of Mechuza, the Sacha Bamaya, that he took, he was bathing, the Salik, and he exited, the Ichrach Vesatinim. Then he wrapped himself up, whether it was in a towel or a sheet, to Oti Vatale. And you hopped on board there, sat on that towel, on that sheet or tunic that he was putting on, Umatzat Mine, and you got a big, delicious meal out of that, below Dotli, and you didn't tell me about it, you didn't share this news. So first of all, this is like a saying about a husband and wife that are quarreling. And now that they're quarreling for 7 years, and she's telling him, you had a feast and you didn't invite me to come to the feast. Rashi over here says, that's because the people of Mechuza lived a good life. They were big, they were fat, they enjoyed life. We have other examples of that. That's why Rova, who was the Morei Harav from Mechuza, had a lot of trouble with the people of Mechuza many times, because they weren't exactly people who listened. They were living the good life in Mechuza. So that's why the example is brought about the Mechuza, because it's speaking to these people who are of generous size that they can provide the gnat, get a good meal out of it. The problem is, it says for Shav Shani, for 7 years. Did you tell us that a gnat doesn't last more than a day? What are you talking about 7 years over here? So Amarlei, Velitameich, Hadam Rinche, another folk saying, Shitin Mane Parzla, 60 Mane. Mane means 100 coins, dinarim, of silver. So it's 60 times 100, or 6,000 dinari kesef, Parzla, which is iron. Talule Labaka Bikurnase. That is the power or the sting of a gnat in its proboscis, or in its bite. The power that it has, or the sting that it has, is very painful. And over there it says that it's 6,000 dinar kesef. The pain of the sting is as if someone smacked you with a 6,000-pound hammer. Miika, does that even exist? Iu gufe kamahavi. The gnat itself, how much does it weigh? How can it be that its sting is 6,000 dinar kesef if it itself doesn't even weigh a dinar kesef? Doesn't make any sense. Ella bimane didhu. It must be in their mane, in their coinage. Hachanami bishane didhu, in their years. So in gnat years, there's 7 gnat years, or there are 6,000 dinari kesef of the gnats, and that's what it means. On a relative basis to the size of the gnat, that is the proportional number of years or proportional weight. The truth is that I would assume they could have just answered, it's an exaggeration. It's just trying to give a sense of proportion that it went on for so long, or that it really is painful when the gnat bites. So both of those would have been sufficient answers, but the Gemara just says it's in gnat years, it's in gnat weight, and therefore it's not comparable, and you can't bring a proof from this against that view of Rav, that a baka or a gnat doesn't live more than one day. The Marsha over here, Kedarka Bakodesh, says that this is really an enigmatic explanation over here, which is that the female and male are about a husband and wife who are planning or plotting to do bad, and the husband does something evil, and he doesn't include his wife. His wife's angry that he didn't include her in the bad deed that they were going to do, or include her in the problematic behavior that he was engaged in. And then the second one is about Balei Lashon Hara, which is that people who speak Lashon Hara, they don't think they're really doing anything, but the truth is that their words are stinging and powerful like a pounding hammer, and that's like similar to the gnat, which everything seems so small and irrelevant, but nevertheless, the bite is stinging and powerful, and same thing with Balei Lashon Hara, people who speak Lashon Hara. It's not Hatam. So now we come back to our issues of Trefolt after that small sidebar. Rashi says that this has to do with the previous sugya because of the problem that we're going to raise here, which is not Hatam Beima, Balat Hamesh Regalim. This is in Bechorot with regards to an issue of a Bechor that's born. Is it a Baal Mum or is it not a Baal Mum? If it's a Baal Mum, then the Kohen can eat it, Bechulim. If it is not a Baal Mum, it has to be brought on the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim, in the Mikdash, as a Korban Bechor. So the question is, if you have a behemah that's born with 5 legs, is that considered to be a mum that would disqualify it from going on the mizbeach? So behemah balatei meshulei moshein le'ela shalosh, or if it only has 3, how is it mum? For the korban, that is a mum, and it will not be brought on the mizbeach. But it does not make it sound like it is a treifa. When the Mishnah says mum, it means mum as opposed to treifa. If it's a treifa, then it can't be put on the Mizbeach, and it can't be eaten by the Kohen either. If it's a mum, then it can't go on the Mizbeach, but it can be eaten by the Kohen. Samravuna, lo shanu ela shechaser biyeter biyad. That's only true if the extra limb is in the forelegs. Aval chaser biyeter biregel, if it's in the hind legs, treifa na mihabyo. It would also be a treifa. My taima, what's the reasoning over here? Koyeter kinatul dami. Any excess is if it is missing. So the way that Rashi explains it over here is that you have a principle, davi kishmuta yerech bebehema. That's the connection to the previous sugya that we just learned, that if you have a dislocated or missing hind leg from an animal, that's considered to be a treifa. So Rashi says over here, if you have three, then you're definitely missing one of the hind legs, and that's why it's a treifa. If you have five legs, three hind legs, we view it as being the same as having three legs. Then we look at it as if it is missing, meaning kol yitur, having five legs with the three in the back, is equivalent to having one in the back. And that means that it's as if the animal is missing a leg, because we look at it as kenotul dami, and when it's missing, we say that that is kishmutat yerech. Say shmutat yerech is a treifa. That's the way that Rashi views it over here. So the Ravan has an explanation that you have a situation in which the legs now are a duplicate of each other, and you don't know which one is the right one. So we look at them as they're both gone. And that means that it's as if the animal is missing a leg. But the nafkamino, then the Rabban himself says this, is that if it's clear that one of the legs is the proper leg and the other one is the excess, then the proper leg we would leave and the excess leg we look as if it's gone, and then it wouldn't be a problem. And actually the animal would not be a treifa in that situation. That's the view of the Rabban. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that we don't view it as shmutat yerech, because the yerech doesn't belong over here. You have two legs that are functioning that are the yerech, and no yerech is missing. So then what does it mean that it's kichaser damia? We look at it as if it's missing. And the problem is that when you take out this aver, it leaves an exposed area. That exposed area is what creates the treifa over here. So that's the view of the Ramban, and the nafkamina between those positions would be with certain organs where the absence of the organ is not problematic. So for instance, by a tchol, by a spleen, where if the entire organ is missing, we said before that it's not a treifa. So for Rashi, if you have two spleens, and then we look at it as if it's missing, it's being missing is not a problem. On the other hand, for the Ramban, the fact that now if you had that taken out, there'd be a hole in the system over there, that would be a problem, and that would be a treifa according to the Ramban. Whereas according to Rashi, that wouldn't be a treifa. Alright. Ahu chiyuta, davale tarte sanya dibe. He had two sika. Instead of one, he had two. Before we spoke about this case of the Karet Sabtimi and the Karet Sabtimi, one of the explanations for that was Sanya Dibi. And over there we had saw different explanations in the Rishonim for it. The one that we favored, and we're going to use as explanation over here, was that it was a reference to the Sikkim. So over here, instead of having one, he has two Sikkim, which is a pouch that sits between the small intestines and the large intestine and the bowels. And it has the appendix attached to it. That's where the appendix is found. And it's called Sanya Dibe because there's a lot of disgusting stuff inside of it. And the way that Rashi brought one of the explanations over there is that even when the animal is eaten by the wolf skips that part because it's so disgusting. That it's something that it wouldn't want to eat. That's the Sanya Dibe. So over here it has two of those sikum. So I told the Ravina. They brought it to Ravina of a tarfa, mid Ravuna. He was Torah fit because of Ravuna, which is if you have two, and then it's kichoser dami, it's as if it's missing. If you have a missing sikum, there's a problem over there. V'ishavchana dodi. On the other hand, if they pour into each other, then it is kshera. Because that makes them into a single entity or a single organ. It's only when they're two separate organs that we look at sikum as if it's missing. And that we already had. Karasachitzona. Shenito rubo is a treifa. So do over here. If the two of them are together and they're shavchana dodi, that they mix together, it really means it's one organ with kind of a line down the middle. Because they go into each other, it's no longer a problem. Hai gufta davi nofka mi bekase lehovlila. So there was a piping, according to Rashi, that went between, it was an extra pipe that went between the bekase, which is the bekosot, or the reticulum, and the hovlila, according to Rashi, is the hemses, or the omasum. So they actually naturally flow into each other, but there was an extra piping, an extra tube there that actually connected between the two of them. Stover Ravashi the Mitrafa. Ravashi thought it's going to be a treifa. Kol de Yeter Kechoser Dami. You have something extra. It's as if it's missing, it's problematic. The Ravashi. So Rabuna Amar Bar Chiya says to Ravashi, Kohani Chive Bariyato Hochiidluhu. All the animals of ours that graze out there, they have this extra piping in it. So therefore, how could it be that this is a trefa? Every animal that we take out has it. And since every animal that has it must be that it's not a trefa, must be that's normal to find these inside of an animal. How gupta, dava ma'avra, mebekase the karso. Then they find a different animal with a piping going between the bekase, is the bekoso, the reticulum, and the karso, which is the karis, which is the rumen. Savar mar baravashi lakshura. So now, extrapolating from what happened in the incident with his father, he thinks that this should be kasher, because we said before that the piping wasn't a problem. Samalei Rabbi Hoshaya, atu kulu b'chada mechita machitinu? Do you brush them with one stroke? Is everything all the same, or all trefot the same? Eichad itmar itmar. Where we've said that it's the case, then it's kasher. Eichad lo itmar, lo itmar. Where it's not said, then it's not said. In other words, the fact that all animals have this tubing between the reticulum and the omasum, between the beta kosod and the hemsays, that's enough evidence to say that this is normal and it's not a trefa. Now for you to extrapolate that to say, now when I have a piping between the beta kosod, the reticulum, and the karsa and the rumen, that's not something you can extrapolate from this. Not all animals have that. And you can't just say because one piping is okay, the other piping is okay. That's just not true. And interestingly enough, in both of these situations, there is a natural flow between them, which is that the digestive flow is that it goes from the beta kosod to the hemsays. That's where it goes when it's going through the ruminant stomachs. And therefore, their piping over there, you would have thought wouldn't be a problem. That's probably what Mar Baravash is thinking. You have a pipe between the beta kosod and the rumen. The ochel of the ruminant goes into the karis first, and then after it's regurgitated it and then swallowed it again, it goes into the beta kosod. So that's actually the next stop in the digestive system anyway. Despite that fact, if there's a piping that doesn't belong there, that is there, it is problematic. Because we don't find all animals with it. If all animals had it, it wouldn't be problematic. Rashi brings over here, V'yeterhu, since over here it's extraneous, kilu nital achad min ha'me'ayim k'negdo, who? As if one of the stomachs now is missing, the kol yeter k'noto dami. Anything that's excessive is considered as if it's gone, and it's as if now you have one of the stomachs is missing. V'heina halacha, that's the halacha, the lekem amdupoli. Nobody argues over here. Therefore, the halacha is kol yeter, command the notul dami. Ba'avagav damran. Wait, before we said ba'one dereya, and it came to the lobes of the lung, leit hilchata kavatei derova b'yeterot. We said over there that extra lobes are not a trefa against what Rava said. Why don't we just apply Rav Huna's din to what Rava said? If you have an extra lobe, it's as if the lobe's missing, now you have a hole in the lung. Why over there do we say it's fine that you have an extra lobe? How kimna b'hu dekayim b'daradoni. That's only if it's along the plane of the other lobes. Because that's normal. So again, once you have something that the Rabbanan have determined that this is something normal to be found in an animal, then even if it's extra or excess, it's not classified as being something that is kenotul dami, as if it's missing. So similar to over here, where the piping between the beta kosot and the hemsays is not considered to be unusual, so too by lungs, extra lobes, along the plane of the other lobes is not considered to be unusual. Aval, beni beni, trefa. But if it's not on the same plane, it's on the back of the lungs or on the sides of the lungs, then it is problematic. Ema kanotul dummy. And therefore it'll be as if it's taken out and it'll be problematic, with the exception of the accessory lobe that we saw they found in all the animals. So that wasn't problematic because again, they found it in all the animals. But gabe raglayim, dalav orchayu bade trefa. And by legs, when that's not a normal thing to have an animal with five legs, then for sure the leg that is removed is going to cause a trefa. So Rashi gives you like a summary of what we just saw here with regards to excess organs. What is the din? Now the Gemara says, Heid Natan Bar Shila, Ravta Bachaya de Tzipori. So he had testimony from Natan Bar Shila, who was the head butcher in Tzipori, Lifnei Rabbi. He's giving this testimony for Rabbi. Ashnei Bnei Me'ayim Ayotzim Min HaBeima Ke'achat. You have two stomachs that are exiting from an animal at once. She trefa. That's problematic. Uchanek dan ba'ov she'ra. And if that happens in a bird, it's considered to be fine. So now, what we're speaking about here, according to Rashi, is that we have two intestines leaving the keba. The keba, which is the tail end of the digestive part of the stomach, the fourth stomach of the animal, which is the abomasum, that keba has two small intestines that leave from it, one at the end of the keba where it's normal to have it, and one in the middle of the keba. So Rashi actually says that it's coming out of two places in the keba, one at the normal location, one in the middle, and that's what it means, shnayim. And then keachad means that they both serve the same purpose, not that they're coming out simultaneously. Other Rishonim view it as that they need to be exiting from the same point, which is that you have two pipings that are exiting from that same location. Not that, like Rashi, where it's one in the middle of the keba, one at the end of the keba, but rather they're both exiting either from the end of the keba or they're along the intestines. There's a split somewhere along the way, and that's what it means, shnayim keachad, that they split or they divide at a single location, versus Rashi's view that they are of one function, rather than splitting from a single location. So right now, what we're assuming is if you have something like that in a behemah, it's problematic. If you have that in a bird, it would not be problematic. And then Rashi explains why by the oath this isn't problematic. He brings two explanations. One is, even though we don't find this in birds in general, hachikimlu, they had a misora that was the case, or that it was okay by a bird, or birds do have this item. V'yesh mifarshim shekol oath darko kein. But some explain that is the case by all birds. And it's because structurally, the way the intestines work by the birds is it comes down the esophagus, enters into the crop. After the crop, it re-enters the intestines and then continues on to the gizzard. And then from the gizzard, it continues on into the intestines again. And so in essence, the gizzard has intestines extending from both sides. One going into the intestines, continuing on through the digestive system. And one is an intestinal tube that comes from the crop to the gizzard. And that's the explanation over there that they have two intestines, because one that connects between the zephec and the corcoban, the crop and the gizzard, and one intestine that connects it to the intestines and the continuation after the gizzard. And so always you have that by the bird, which is that you have two intestines, one coming in and one going out from the crop. Although the Ravan just explains that that's the reality when it comes to birds, that they have two sanet dibe. That's actually something that does happen and we do find in birds. And therefore, it's different than an animal, and that's why it's considered to be normal over there, versus the case of an animal where it's considered to be unusual. Bamed, varim amurim, where is that said? Shiyotzim b'shnei mekomot. That's when they exit from two places. Aviyotzim b'makom echad, b'kalim ad ketzpa k'sheira. If they exit from the same place, and then they come back together within an etzpa, they are considered to be k'sheira. If they exit from the same place, and then they get back together within an etzpa, then that would be okay. The assumption over now that it comes back within an etzba is, for instance, over here. You have along the small intestines, they divide, and then they reconnect. You have some small piping that separates between them in a very small area, and they come back together. That's what we think we're speaking about right now, given the qualifications that we've seen. If they start at the same place, and then they rejoin within an etzba, that's going to be fine. So now, pligi ba ravami ravasi. Chadamar, hudahadre v'arve. That's only if they reconnect and they join together. And even if they don't come back together, then it's fine. The one who says that they get back together and they rejoin, then I understand what it means. Etzba means that they separated for a period of time, and then they got together, back together, within an etzba of that time. What does it mean that they don't get back together? Then what does it mean? Within an etzba. An etzba of what? Because they never come back together. So the answer is, ake etzba milamato. Then an etzba of the rectum. Meaning that when they rejoin, or they exit towards the tail of the animal. You have two separate intestinal systems in the animal. So according to the one view, is that they only can separate for a very short time and then rejoin within an etzba. But the other opinion, they can run these two separate systems the entire way, all the way through, the intestines can be separate, as long as they rejoin at the etzba, within an etzba of the rectum. So that way, when it expels the waste, there's only one area expelling of the waste. There's not two different separations at the end where the animal is defecating out of two locations. Rather, it connects that it has a single rectum. So that would be the ad katzba, means within an etzba of the tail end of the bowels, that it connects right before the tail end of the rectum. Alright, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im nitla notza psula. It says that the down feathers are taken off the bird, it is psula. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel, Amru Davar Achad. Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel have the same opinion. Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Ran, Rabbi Yehuda, who was in our Mishnah, who said that if the feathers are missing from the bird, it's okay. But if the down feathers, those little fuzzy feathers are missing, then it's a treifa. Rabbi Shmuel, it's none. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, hanotza mitzarefet. The notza is part and parcel of the bird for pigul. Speaking about a chatato over here, and he has a machshava of chutz lizmano. If he has a machshava of chutz lizmano on the notza, then the notza are considered part and parcel of the bird, the edible part of the bird, and therefore you would have a din of pigul. So what you see from there is that the notza is like the basar of the oaf, and if they were missing, it seemingly he would hold like Rabbi Yehuda. That's like as if the basar, the flesh of the animal and the skin of the animal was taken off, and that would be a treifa. So Amarava, Dilmalohi, who says they have to have the same opinion? Adkan kolomarka Rabbi Yehuda hachel inyan treifa. Deleka mide de maginale. The reason that it's a treifa over here is because the feathers are what provide the warmth and protection for the bird. Absent that, the bird's gonna die because it has no protection. Well, inyan, if gule, kirabonan svirle. But maybe by pigul, he'll agree with the Rabban. These aren't necessarily edible items. They aren't a part of the bird that's classified as something that's ra'oi la'chilat adam, and therefore it won't be subject to pigul. And also from Yishmael's perspective, maybe he considers it over there, l'inyan if gule. That has to do with pigul. Who says that these are the protection, or these are the things that provide the warmth for the bird? It's possible that that's not the case. And so, maybe even without them, the bird can survive. Just a question, are they part of the pigul or not part of the pigul? But it's not an issue of whether this makes it into a treifa or doesn't make it into a treifa. So what Rava points out is that you don't have to say that they're of the same opinion. You can separate their opinions and say that they each independently have a position, and they don't necessarily agree the other Tana's position. So Rashi explains that this issue is speaking about pigul, and that's the statement of Rabbi Shmuel references to pigul. Look at the Bali Tosafot, he brings him a Benu Tam, that this is actually connected to a Mishnah in Taharot, and has to do whether the feathers are mitzaref for kebetzat ochlim, for tumat ochlim, whether the feathers are included. So according to the Benu Tam, the reason that it's mitzaref over here is because it's considered to be a shomer, something that's a protective layer over the item, and that's why it's included in the kebetzat ochlim. But then what they're trying to say is, if that's considered to be the shomer and it's removed, that means it's as if it's exposed, and it's if it's gluda, as if there's been skin removed from the animal, the protective layer has been gone, and therefore it would be a gluda and a treifa. And therefore you can see at the end of the Tosafot, the girsa of the Rabbeinu Tam was, avali inyan agune lo magin. So that when he distinguishes between the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda will say that you don't normally store basar oaf with the notza, and therefore he disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel says that even though for dine tuma, it has a din of a shomer, Leinian protection of the bird itself when it's alive, who says that that is relevant? So he has that alternative girsa that matches up with the way that he's reading this about a din in Taharot, not a din of pigul. The next Mishnah, achuzat adam, they have some sort of blood clot or blood gathering. Hamitushenet, it was exposed to smoke. Hamitsunenet, it has a virus, has a cold, it is shivering all the time. Mishalach la hardufne, or it ate what probably known as oleander, which is a vegetation that's poisonous for animals, but not for human beings. Shachlat suat tarnagolim, or consumed chicken feces. Oh, shishatat mayim haraim, or it drank mayim migulim. That's water that was exposed, left out exposed. Ksheira, the animal is kasher. If you shuck the animal, you can eat it. It's totally a fine animal. Achlat samam of it. On the other hand, if it ate poison. Oshi kisya nachash, or it was bitten by a snake, a venomous snake, and it would die from that. Muteret mishum treifa. The animal's not a treifa. Fasura mishum sakanat nefashot. But on the other hand, you can't eat it because it's dangerous for the human being to consume it. The poison that the animal ate does not make it into a treifa. It will kill the animal. Problem is, it also killed the human being. It consumes this animal. So you can't eat the animal not because it's a treifa. You can't eat the animal because it's dangerous for you to eat. Same thing with the venom of a snake. The venom of a snake works different than drusa. Before we said before that drusa is a problem of venom that goes into the animal and then attacks or eats away at the internal organs. The venom of a snake kills the animal, but it doesn't necessarily cause deterioration of the internal organs. It causes the organs to shut down, but doesn't necessarily cause them to deteriorate. And so that's the difference. The venom of a snake will kill the animal. It will not make it into a treifa. Now whether that's because there's a possible recovery from the venom, if you have the antidote, which isn't true by the treifa, or that the poison itself over time will act on the animal. If the animal in its current state is not a trefa, just like a misukenet is not considered to be a trefa. Just because the animal will die doesn't mean it's a trefa. It has to die because of there's a internal deterioration. There's a problem with one of the organs that guarantees that it will die. That's a situation in which it's considered to be a trefa. Just because the animal will die doesn't mean it's a trefa. The problem now is if you eat that, you're going to be subject to that venom, and that's why it's problematic. By a drusa, the problem is that the animal is a trefa, because that venom, quote-unquote, that is placed in by the swipe of the claw of an animal actually affects the internal organs and makes them into a trefa, and that's how the animal dies. It dies from the injury or from that venom or, we said before, bacterial infection that affects the internal organs. So that's why they are different. Amar Shmuel, helita chiltit, a trefa. If you forced it, stuffed it with hilitit, asafetida, which is a type of vegetation that has sharp edges to it or thorns in it. So you forced it to eat it, it's a trefa, maitama, the minkamalo the maine. Because when it's going through the digestive system, it's impossible that that sharp or those thorns aren't going to puncture something along the way, and therefore it's going to become a trefa. Meiti Rav Shizvi, where he asks from this tosefta, akuzata dam, femushenet, b'shachal hardufne, these are all the things that were mentioned in our Mishnah, b'shachlat suat tarnagolim, b'shatat maimarim, ha'elitia tia, chiltit, upilpilim, he fed it either crowfoot, chiltit, which we just saw before, which is asafetida, and pilpilim, and peppers, achlat some of it, or if it eats poison, ksheira. This animal is ksheira. Now we're going to run into a couple of problems here. Hekisha nachash, oshnashka kelev shoteh, if it was bitten by a venomous snake, or bitten by a rabid dog, muteret, mishum trefa, it's not a problem of trefa, basura, mishum sakanat nefashot, but it's a problem of danger to the person who's eating it. So kasha chiltit al chiltit, we have a problem now because the brayta, the tosefta says that if it eats chiltit, it's ksheira, and Shmuel says if it eats chiltit, it's a trefa. Kasha samam of it, the samam of it, the tosefta that we brought says when it eats poison, then it's okay, the animal's ksheira. Our mission says if you eat poison, then it's ksheira, but you can't eat it because of sakanat nefashot. How come the tosefta doesn't put that in the category of sakanat nefashot? My answer is chiltit al chiltit lo kasha. The difference in the chiltit between Shmuel, Stim, and the bright is not a problem. Lo kasha kan ba'alin, kan be'kartin. It depends if it's eating the leaves, which are not problematic, or it's eating the drops of it, which are either too physically sharp or too potent for the animal to be able to handle. And therefore, there's a distinction within the asafetida itself. Certain parts of it are edible without having those sharp edges. The other parts are not edible. Some of it, some of it, lo kasha, the poison is also not a problem. Hadida, hadadam. Depends if it's poisonous for the animal or it's poisonous for human beings again. Wait a minute, so then why do you mention that? We already have an example of that, the oleander that's mentioned in the Mishnah and the Tosefta is already something that's poisonous for animals and not for human beings. That's exactly the point. There's two different poisons. One's hardufne, one's another type of poison that is problematic for the animal, not problematic for human consumption. So those poisons leave the animal as a ksheira and not problematic to eat. On the other hand, if it's poison that would affect a human being, then the animal is not a trefa, but you don't want to eat it because of sakanat nefashot. My tia, what is this crowfoot that we mentioned before? I'm Rav Yehuda, ikra demirirta. It is the root of, Rashi says over here, shel Torah. It's either it's the root of succory or root of aconite, which is this crowfoot that they're spinning about. All right, we're going to stop here on the top line of Nuntet Amud Aleph.